Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Coming up on September 2nd, the Utah Utes will make their return right here to KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. They'll open up the season against Weber State. And after 2020, I think a lot of people are excited to get some sort of similar or normal college football. We're going to talk all things Utah, BYU, and everything else in the country right now with college football guru Phil Still. Of course, he's the author of Phil Still's College Football Preview magazine, which is out right now. Phil, it's a pleasure to get you back on the show. I look forward to this segment every year. Thank you so much.
Hey, Jordan, always a pleasure being on. I got to tell you, I am so excited about this upcoming football season, and we're going to have fans back in the stands this year. Exciting. We know we're playing football, and like last year when four conferences canceled their season and then brought it back. So I think that you're going to see intense home field edges this year, just with the fans happy to be back.
No question about it. And of course, out of the five Power Five conferences, I don't know that any one of them was affected as much as the Pac-12, which definitely put a damper on the season for many people here in the state of Utah. And Phil, I got to throw this out there. You and I had a conversation about 2 weeks ago, and I asked you what it was like last year compared to this year. And you had mentioned that you knew more about a lot of the players returning or coming into these programs than the coaches themselves. I mean, they even admitted that to you last year.
Yeah, the first-year head coaches. And the first-year head coaches last year, I would send them over my my team sheets, and they have every single player on the team, and it would have all my notes, individual notes on every player, and also have all the stats on every single player. And with the first-year head coaches last year, they would get the sheets, and they would say, okay, I'll talk to you, Phil. And then when we got into the call, they would say, you know, Phil, I haven't even seen these kids practice yet, so you probably know more about my team than I do. So it was an extremely tough year for all first-year head coaches, especially those that didn't have spring practice. And I think we saw that in the record. Now, a veteran coach like Coach Whittingham, naturally, he knows everything about his team. And, you know, there's nothing that you could be learned. But first-year head coaches had an extremely tough time last year. And the refreshing thing this year, Jordan, I talked to everybody post-spring. Every head coach knew their team inside and out.
Phil, I got to ask you, as far as what went down in the Pac-12 last year, do coaches view that as a hindrance going into 2021, or is it a factor at all?
It's probably not a factor at all. I think the good thing was that we actually played football and they got some games in. You know, when I was talking to Coach Rolovich of Washington State, he's like, Phil, you know, I'm happy we played, but you really can't take much from what happened that season because it was just so bizarre and so unique and not knowing who was playing. But I'm just happy, and the coaches, I think, were happy that we actually played football, kept it going, got conference champions in each conference, got an actual national champ, and now we'll be back to normal this year.
Well, let's talk about the Utah Utes again. They'll begin the season September 2nd against Weber State. And Phil, a couple of years ago when we had you on the show, you pegged Utah as one of your surprise sleeper squads. And lo and behold, they had a chance to get into the college football playoff had they gotten past the Pac-12 title game against Oregon. I know you're equally high on Utah this year. You view them as a team that could definitely surprise some people.
Yeah, I got them as my number four surprise team in the country as opposed to my number one surprise team in the country in 2019. And, you know, you got to like, there's a lot to like about Utah. You start with the quarterback position. You know, Cam Rising won the starting quarterback job last year and then got injured in the opener. And they bring in a Charlie Brewer from Baylor, who is basically a 3 or 4 year starter at Baylor. A lot of veteran experience there, so you can't go wrong with the quarterback position. TJ Pledger is added at running back, Chris Curry, Tavion Thompson. Tragic loss, of course, of Ty Jordan in the offseason, but I do think there's talent still at the running back position. The receiving core, you know, you look at the tight ends, Fotheringham and Keithy, that's one of the best tight end rooms in the country. Britton Covey is a guy who's been there for, what, about 10 years now? He's back at receiver. I think it's a talented receiving core. The offensive line, and when I was talking to Coach Whittingham, he said it may be the best offensive line in his tenure, and that sort of maybe says it up, because he's had some pretty doggone good offensive lines. So that's a really good offense. And then defensively, there's always a good defensive line with Utah, and this year's no difference. I rate him my number 11 defensive line. The linebacking core, I rate number 13, led by Nefe Sewell and Lloyd. And then you look at the defensive backs, I rate him number 13 in the country. You got to like the cornerbacks and Clark, Phillips, and Broughton. They got two good-sized corners that have got plenty of experience. So this is a talented defense. And when you look at the schedule this year, you know, I've got Utah favored in all their games with the exception of at USC. I think if they get past that, hold up against Arizona State at home, which I think they will, this is a team that's got a chance to be special this year.
I like how you mentioned Charlie Brewer. One of the things, Phil, that has been so apparent, this is a program, and Coach Kyle Whittingham has done wonders actually working the transfer portal. I mean, if you look at Charlie Brewer, he was just named to the Maxwell and Davey O'Brien Award preseason watch list. It's a kid that had a lot of success under Matt Rhule at Baylor, but it's just one of many transfers that Utah has been able to bring in, and I guess used to establish a pretty prominent team of the Pac-12.
Yeah, and I love the way that Coach Whittingham worked the transfer portal this year. I mentioned the running backs. Pledger's coming in from Oklahoma. Curry's coming in from LSU. And there were numerous other transfers throughout the team that have been added to a very talented roster that makes them extremely dangerous this year.
You mentioned Utah really only having one game that you would look at and say, okay, it's iffy. That's going to USC, playing at the Los Angeles Coliseum. Phil, when I go over their schedule, I mean, the first four games of the season appear to be wins. That USC game comes in on October 9th, but another game that I would be a little bit concerned about, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Stanford, November 5th on the road. I mean, it's never an easy place to go play.
It is not, and I only have Utah a 3-point favorite in that game, much like I only have my 3-point underdog against USC. And, you know, when I talked to Coach Shaw going over the team with him, he feels they're one of the top teams in the Pac-12 this year. In fact, pointed out that last year they didn't catch a lot of breaks, and they did not. Stanford last year, you know, you go to their opening game of the season, which they played against Oregon. I think it was 30 minutes before the game they announced that they're without their starting quarterback and their top receiver, and all of a sudden, and they also missed four field goals. Their outstanding field goal kicker. Toner never missed four field goals in his career, missed four field goals in one game. So they could easily have beaten Oregon in the opener, and then the end of the season, they didn't even have a home game. They didn't have any place to practice down the stretch, yet somehow still went 4-2. He's confident they'll be one of the top contenders in the Pac-12 this year, so that is a very dangerous game.
If we look at the amount of NFL talent that Kyle Whittingham has produced defensively, especially in the secondary, you go back a couple of seasons ago, there was just a grip of talent coming out of the secondary into the NFL. There's still some NFL talent on the defensive unit this year. I mean, there's a couple that that I would expect at least to be considered as high draft picks if we jump all the way ahead to next April.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one of them, Micah Tafua, at the defensive end spot, he's a guy that can get after the quarterback yet hold the point. So he's got a lot of good things going for him. And then Jatravius Broughton, who at the cornerback spot, I think he's an NFL caliber guy. He's just a guy that got great speed. And last year he was honorable mention, Pac-12. I think he's got a tremendous upside.
Again, our guest right now is Phil Steele as we talk Utah Ute football ahead of the 2021 season, which again will start on September 2nd. Phil, let's flip. Let's talk BYU. A lot of transition going on here. Of course, it was one of the more exciting seasons in recent memory for BYU. Number 2 overall pick, Zach Wilson, now gone. A couple of logical replacements for Zach Wilson at quarterback, but obviously that's the story for BYU, right, in the offseason. Who takes the helm now?
Yeah, not just quarterback, though. I mean, they did lose a lot from last year. Last year they had a veteran team. And in fact, when I was talking to Coach Satake at the end of the call last spring, I clearly identified it as the best team he had had. And I talked to him each of his 5 years he had been there last year at that point. And then he sort of mentioned to me as we were getting off the phone, he said, right at the end of the conversation, you know, Phil, we don't play the schedule we used to play. And then, boom, last year they played the schedule they used to play, because because they didn't have any Power 5 teams on it, and they nearly ran the table. Their only loss last year came against Coastal Carolina, a game they had 2 days to prepare for and had to travel to the East Coast and take on an option offense, and yet they almost scored a touchdown at the end of the game and won it. Now, last year's veteran squad has been replaced. This year they have just 11 starters back, and you know, this normally 11 starters is sort of middle of the road. This year, 11 starters coming back, you're at the very bottom. They're number 119 on my experience chart. They've got three capable quarterbacks, Jacob Conover, Jaron Hall, and Baylor Romney, all battling for that quarterback position. They're loaded at running back with Algier and Katoa. And defensively, I had major question marks about the defensive line coming in, Coach Satake said he had no qualms about the defense. He thought that the defensive front will be just as good as they were last year, despite the losses they had up front. So they're a dangerous team. Utah has owned the series, and Utah is the much more experienced team. So I rate Utah about a touchdown favorite in that game, but it's a rivalry game, and BYU is going to be good this year.
Yeah, as far as the running back situation goes, when you look at the stable for BYU, I think it's a fair case to say it may be the best tandem that we've ever seen coming out of the backfield for BYU. That has to help in transition at quarterback.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, Algier and Katoa, you're talking about a 1,000-yard rusher. And then with Katoa, you're talking about a guy who's been there, done that. He's got over 1,000 career yards. And then they've got a guy that they add in at the freshman, the Miles Davis, who's got a lot of speed and potential. Give him a different caliber back there. So that is a loaded backfield.
Based off of BYU's schedule last year, Phil, how concerning is it to see Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah all in September?
Yeah. Not so much Arizona. I think that'll be a pretty easy one. But playing Utah and Arizona State back-to-back, those are my two favorites in the Pac-12 South this year. That doesn't make it easy. And then, you know, they also have to play a much-improved Baylor team on the road this year. Washington State was – both Baylor and Washington State were first-year head coaches last year that went through a lot of stuff. They're going to both have much better teams. Even – how about Bronco Mendenhall coming back to BYU on October 30th? So, and then they have to play the option of Georgia Southern right prior to playing USC. They play the top three teams out of the Pac-12 South in USC, Utah, and Arizona State. That makes for a pretty tough schedule.
No, no question. No question about it. You mentioned how BYU, not quite to the level of Utah, at least at this stage. And if you go back and look at that series, BYU's lost 9 straight games. Phil, we make a big deal out of it in the media. The fans make a big deal out of it. And I guess this is a question that can go across the entire country. When you see a team or a school that has a losing skid like this to a rival, does it really, I guess, float over their heads like a bad shadow, or is it pretty much just the media and fans that talk about it?
I think the coaches and the players may say it's just another game floats over their head, but it's got to wear on them. You take a look at Ohio State, Michigan. Ohio State has owned Michigan as of late, much like Michigan had a little slate where they owned Ohio State. So I think that there's definitely something where it's a high priority to get that first win in the series in a long time.
Again, our guest right now is Phil Steele. We'll talk about where you can get Phil Steele's College Football Preview, the magazine, here in just a moment. Phil, we'll move to the national level, go all the way across the country. Last year, we had the top four squads. We had Notre Dame, Ohio State, Alabama, and Clemson. Your top four, I know, looks a little bit different this year. Let's start with Notre Dame, a big transition for this school. They lose Ian Book, the all-time winningest quarterback in school history. I think there's still some talent on this Notre Dame roster. What's the forecast for Notre Dame?
Yeah, they still have plenty of talent. And you lose a guy like Ian Book, but you replace him with Jack Cohn, who was had a solid year with Wisconsin 2 years ago, guiding them to an almost unbeaten record. So I think Jack Cohn is not a problem. Kyron Williams, a running back, not a problem. You worry a little bit about what they lost at receiver, but they've got some talent there. And then the offensive line. They lose some key players on the offensive line, but they had in a guy like Kane Madden coming in from Marshall, who's was an all-conference player at Marshall. That helps, and they've got four players with starting experience on the offensive line. Now, defensively, Notre Dame had one of the best defenses in the country. They got 6 starters back. They're going to be solid on that side of the ball. And when you look at their schedule this year, there's no easy games. I mean, the lightest games on the schedule are Toledo and Purdue, a couple of bowl-caliber teams. They get them at home. But there's also no unwinnable games on the schedule. They play Wisconsin and Chicago. They do have to travel to face Virginia Tech on the road. But there's one of my nine sets of power ratings actually calls for them to go unbeaten. Most most of them call for one or two losses, but I think they're a dangerous team. But only 9 returning starters. They're number 128 on my experience chart.
Could a one-loss Notre Dame team crash the playoffs again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if they get to one loss with this schedule, they could easily get in there. Now, that's provided you don't have 4-0 or one-loss conference champions at the end of the year, but that rarely happens, and so I think Notre Dame would have that shot.
Okay, let's talk about the other 3 teams that got into the college football playoffs last year. Phil, I don't want to spoil anything, but if we look at your top 4, it's fairly similar to what we saw last year minus Notre Dame.
Yeah, went out on a limb this year, Jordan. I've got Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Oklahoma in my top 4 getting to the playoff this year. And with Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State, you know, if there's ever a year for the big boys to maybe stub their toe or slip a little bit, this would be it, because everybody in the country has got 15, 16, 17 returning starters coming back, but those 3 teams only have 9, 10, 11 returning starters coming back, and all lose their starting quarterback. So the gap, I think the pack has caught up to them. But when you look at Ohio State, factor in the schedule this year, probably be a double-digit favorite in every game. Alabama will be favored in every game this year. Potential slip-ups would be at Texas A&M and are against Georgia in the SEC championship game. I think both those teams have a shot at them. For Clemson, the 2 potential slip-up spots would be Georgia in the opener and then the ACC title game when they play either Miami of Florida or North Carolina. So I think those 3 teams are vulnerable this year, but as you can tell by the games they'll be favored in, I think all 3 are definitely favorites to get back to the playoff.
And Clemson is losing one of the most surefire quarterback prospects we've seen probably since Andrew Luck, but we got to see what life without Trevor Lawrence looked like for Clemson last year, and Phil, it wasn't all that bleak.
No, DJ Uiagalelei had about 38 points per game in his 2 starts. He's got a better offensive line in front of him than Trevor Lawrence had last year. And he's probably got a better receiving core than Trevor Lawrence had to work with last year. They also have my number 1 defensive line in the country, which makes him dangerous.
Phil, you're very high on Oklahoma. Is this finally the year that we see Lincoln Riley take that next step? We know he's the quarterback whisperer, but boy, it seems like they got a lot of pieces, and this may in fact just be the year.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned the big boys that were in the playoff last year all have 9, 10, 11 returning starters and all lose their starting quarterback. Oklahoma wasn't in the playoff last year, and they are a loaded team. They've got 15 returning starters. Anytime Lincoln Riley's had an experienced quarterback, it's happened 3 times. They've made the playoff each time. They've had 2 Heisman Trophy winners and a Heisman Trophy finalist. Well, this year, Spencer Rattler returns as an experienced quarterback. That's a plus. They have my number 1 rated offensive line in the entire country. My number 2 set of receivers, top 4 running back core. They are loaded on offense, the best offense in the country. Now, when they made the playoff those last 3 times, they've given up 54, 45, and 63 points in the 3 games and been eliminated in the first round. This year, they returned a defense that allowed just 21 points per game last year. Also a defense that allowed less yards per game than Alabama did last year, and one that has 8 returning starters, including my number 3 rated defensive line, number 9 set of linebackers, and number 3 DBs. So this time, you take the number 1 offense, you pair it with a top 5 defense, 15 returning starters overall when all the other big boys are less experienced, and I do think Oklahoma wins their first national title since 2000.
Well, you mentioned that Utah was one of your top 4 surprise teams, so who do you believe, Phil, most logically could slide in and unseat Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio State, or Clemson in the college football playoff?
Well, I think the 2 teams that have the best shot are Texas A&M and Georgia, because I've got them rated right up there like 5 and 6 coming into the season. Texas A&M gets Alabama at home. And Georgia's got just a dream schedule this year. They have 3 SEC road games, and they're all against first-year head coaches, Auburn, Vanderbilt, and Tennessee. After Clemson, they'll be favored in all their games this year. So I think those 2 have a legitimate shot. But if you're looking for a real surprise team, I'm going to stay in the Pac-12 and give you my number 1 surprise team, the Washington Huskies. And a surprise team is a non-top 10 team that I think can make the playoff. We've got a real good track record here. Washington did it in 2016 for me as my number 1 surprise team. Notre Dame, a non-top 10 team, is my number 1 surprise team in 18 and got it done. Utah, as you mentioned, Jordan, was my top surprise team in 2019. And had they won the Pac-12 title game, would have made the playoff. Last year, I had a five-loss Texas A&M as my number one surprise team, and they just missed the playoff. It was between them and Ohio State on Selection Sunday. But my number one surprise team this year is the Washington Huskies. And with Washington, they have a big offensive line, averages about 330 pounds per man, a deep set of running backs, two veteran quarterbacks, dangerous receivers, and a defense that's returned just 2-6 starters the last 2 years. This year has 8 starters back on defense, but I love their schedule. They avoid the top two teams in the Pac-12 South and USC and Utah. The toughest two teams on their schedule are Oregon and Arizona State, and they get them both at home. And I think this year, Jordan, we're going to see a lot of teams have the best home field advantages ever because fans are excited to get back in the stadiums. You're going to have increased attendance. You're going to have loud crowds. And having your two toughest games at home is a big plus. I actually have Washington favored in all 12 games this year. And keep in mind, they're going to be picked second in the Pac-12 media poll when that comes out behind Oregon and the Pac-12 North.
He's Phil Steele, the college football guru, always kind enough to join us each year to break down and preview the upcoming college football season. About a month away from the start again right here on KOAL when Utah takes on Weber State. Phil, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, we have to talk about where you can actually find the magazine. I know there's only a couple of locations where you can get the actual tangible magazine, but you can also go digital as well off your website.
Yeah, you're a heck of a guy, Jordan. I appreciate that. Now, the magazine is 352 pages. If you've never seen it before, it's like getting 130 different media guys rolled into one. We give you the same amount of coverage on a team like Utah State or Akron that we give you on Alabama and Oklahoma. Two full pages, all the information in the same spot on every page makes for a quick, easy reference. This year, as you pointed out, it's only available at two locations, Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. So if you're out there and about, stop at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. They can have it for you. Or you can order it online at philsteele.com. That's S-T-E-E-L-E.com. And there you can get the actual paper version of the magazine, or you can get the digital version. And this year, we're actually updating the digital version to include all the transfers and players out for the year all the way up to the start of the season. So that will be continuously updated for you on the digital version. Either way, go to philsteele.com, Barnes & Noble, or Books A Million.
And, Phil, also, we got to throw the Twitter handle out there as well because you're a heck of a Twitter follow.
I appreciate that, Jordan. Yeah, it's at PhilSteele042. That's at PhilSteele042.
Phil, it's always a pleasure to get you on again. Thank you so much for the time, and enjoy the college football season.
Hey, Jordan, I appreciate that. Always enjoyed talking football with you. Had a lot of fun with you today.
Absolutely. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.